The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show, knee-deep in the middle of Masters of the Universe Revelation. We are committed to this bit, and we are going to see it through for five whole episodes at minimum. Maybe more. Someday. I don't know. This is Knowing is Half the Podcast, and I am Race to Canis.
Wait, there's only five episodes in this season?
That's it, yeah. There's five of the first half of the season, and then they're going to drop five more.
I will say that, like, because yet again this week, it feels like there is not much substance to this show. So the only thing I could think was that they were really doing a slow burn because they had too many episodes. They didn't know what to write. But if there's only five episodes, each one of these should be freaking amazing.
I would argue that they are amazing, but we will talk about that further after we know who you people are.
You don't need to know who I am. I can just be represented by an exasperated sigh.
In more ways than one.
And I need no introduction. Everyone knows TV's Gina Ippolito.
It does seem odd that somebody would choose He-Man, Masters of the Universe, Revelation, Episode 3, The Merman episode, as their first ever foray into this show. But I guarantee you, it is somebody's first time today.
I got to admit, I was excited to see Merman. This show now is sort of disappointing enough to me that when there's an original character, I'm like, no, that's a cool character design. Yay.
No, see, I consider this show a lot like a wrestling show where you're just excited when familiar faces just show up.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if their matches are any good. I'm just happy to see Sergeant Slaughter in the ring again. What is that?
Exactly.
As someone who is currently watching Christian's run in AEW, Christian, who was one of my very favorite wrestlers.
Chan, I don't care what religion he is. You can just call him by his name.
William Jason Ariso has been something of a disappointment to me.
Oh, you mean Christian Cage? Oh, of course. Everybody loves that guy. I don't know why you'd call him by his real name, but weirdo.
No, they do not.
I used to like him when he was part of the Edge and Christian tag team doing poses in the ring. That was fun.
All things to be talked about on another podcast.
Oh, excuse me. Someday I'll break into the AEW podcast when I'm thrown out of the house or something and have free time. That'll be the day that finally happens.
You're not going to watch an episode of wrestling. Come on.
Yeah. What would I add to the show? What knowledge could I possibly bring? Anyway, we're talking about Masters of the Universe Revelation, a fine Netflix program brought to you by Kevin Smith, TV's Gina Ippolito's favorite person to work with in all of creation. Is that correct, Gina Ippolito?
Yeah. You know what? It sounds sarcastic when you say that. And I just want people to know that he is a delightful human being to work with. And yeah.
I mean that with
like
all sincerity.
Him. Despite wishing this show was written a little bit better, I do enjoy him and his company and working with him.
It really sounds like you're angling hard for season two of Masters of the Universe Revelation. Can you comment?
Yeah, I will say season one feels like you're eating something like one of those you know, in cartoons when there's like a delicious looking turkey and someone cuts into it and it deflates. I'm sure we're all familiar with that trope where you cut into a thing and it's like usually the characters are really hungry. They really want this turkey but like it's been cooked wrong or something happened and they cut into it and it just deflates and there's no substance there. That's how I feel about this show. I feel like I'm really excited to eat this delicious He-Man meal. I'm excited to get this He-Man meat in my mouth, if you will. And as soon as I slice into it, there's no real substance there.
I would have gone with the caffeine-free Diet Coke metaphor myself, but I see
what disgusting.
Indeed.
Disgusting. Indeed. Here's the thing. I don't want to kill myself after consuming He-Man. I just wish there was more to it. So that metaphor doesn't work on me, Chan.
No, it works for me because I would enjoy a delicious sugar Coke, you know, the Mexican Coke in a bottle.
Uh-huh.
And I say sugar specifically because I've been duped before and like, oh, hey, look, there's Coke in a bottle. No, they just made it look like Mexican Coke. And then they put the high fructose corn syrup and it's the same old goddamn thing. Sidebar, there is a drink called RC Draft, which is RC Cola, but like a premium draft cola that was my favorite soda in the world.
Wow.
And they stopped making it in the 90s. There's only one place left in the world that makes it, and that's New Zealand. I could buy a 4-pack for like $90. Have it shipped
Boy, how
bad do you want
it? Why don't you
plan a trip to New Zealand? They've got low COVID rates.
Yeah, I don't think they want me or anyone from this country over there. So
yeah, they don't. I'm saying like wait the 9 years that it takes to get its shit together from COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And then plan a vacation based around this soda.
Here's the thing. That is not out of the realm of possibility.
I mean, it would be cheaper to go to New Zealand than buy that soda, for God's sakes.
We're adults. We're allowed to plan vacations for any stupid reason that we want.
Look, I'm in New York right now, so I can 100% back that assertion up.
And that's true. Chan, this is our new segment, Chan in New York. Chan, tell us a story about being in New York City, the Big Apple.
I am sticky.
Yep. It's gross. Yep.
Okay. That's really all I needed to know. Yeah, that's been this segment, Chan in New York.
Here's the thing. I hope you enjoy yourself, but I also hope that like you understand my hatred of it by the time you're done there.
You're from here, aren't you?
Oh my God.
All people from New Jersey say they're from New York.
I'm boarding a plane to New York right now to kill you.
It feels like, you claim this Boonton Township. I've never seen it. I've only seen things on the internet and, you know, like, if people can believe that the fucking Earth is flat because they haven't been out in space, then I can believe that Boonton Township doesn't exist and you're just ashamed of having to live in Flatbush or...
Wow. You know, Chan, to be fair, how many times does Gina off-air tell us, guys, I love being a New Yorker. You know what being a New Yorker means to me? She won't stop with this bit. So it's
bagels,
understandable.
Bagels, pizza, pizza, pizza. Just
My gosh, it's ridiculous. Yankees, that.
That part is true about bagels, 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 pizza, 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 because Gina does not stop talking about food.
Well, that is also true. A fact. Yeah. Yeah. And when I say Yankees, I mean Yankees Deli. here in Los Angeles.
I need several showers whenever I visit New York.
Indeed.
Man, I'm not really in any eager mood to go back, but it is exciting that you're there. It's exciting we're still able to do the show, quite honestly. Even though it's like, how late is it for you right now, Chan? Is it like 3 a.m. where you are right now? Is it 2022 where you are? How does this work?
Hold on. Let me pull out my astrolabe and figure it out.
Yeah, it's not going to come easy.
That is not what she said.
Whoa.
Not what she said. Do you see
now I know you're in the future.
Yeah. 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 This is how we talk in the future.
Speaking of the future, how about a future where we talk about He-Man Episode 3, The Most Dangerous Man in Eternia?
I got flashbacks. Like an apocalyptic vision that I have no interest in being a part of.
Basically, I can only think of Buzz Dixon's book, The Most Dangerous Man in the World.
I thought the same thing.
The G.I. Joe send-up that I've read. I've read that entire book, and we had Buzz on to talk about it. Previous episode, a wonderful episode. I'm not sure if it's in the main feed or not, but it probably should be because it's a delight. Maybe I'll try to find that and put it back up because that is a good episode of radio.
I'm just going to back you up real quick because I have to hear it so often on the Who Would Win show, and I don't ever get to bring it up. So I'm going to bring it up here.
Yes, please.
You use words wrong sometimes. And when you do, often it has very deleterious effects. For example, Buzz Dixon's book was not a send up of G.I. Joe. That would imply it was some sort of parody or mockery of G.I. Joe.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
A G.I. Joe novel, unofficial, but like, yeah.
And I don't want to use words to a delicatessen effect ever. So I understand you.
I enjoy calling Ray out when he tries to use a 75-cent word and fails.
I'm just saying, Ray Stegannis, James Gavsey, both not great with this.
I'm just saying Who Would Win is obviously a safer space than Knowing Is Half the Podcast show. Let me start there.
Can I just say that the most dangerous man in Eternia, which made me think of the most beautiful girl in the world.
Okay.
That's what I was singing while I was watching this.
Okay.
Again, very weird. Like the last episode ended with us seeing, which was episode 2, first of all, ended with us seeing Man at Arms. Like it's a big reveal of like, oh shit, Man at Arms is back. He's been gone for a whole 20 minutes, but now he's back. And I found that very odd, like as if we had watched an entire season of TV and sort of had forgotten about him. And then it was like, he's been here the whole time. But instead it was just like, yeah. Like, look at this. It's real weird that we're doing this. And the fact that they play coy with the title, the most dangerous man in Eternia. So you're sort of going into it thinking, ooh, who is the most dangerous man in Eternia?
I was thinking it.
And then, I mean, I knew who it was because of how we ended the last episode, which was on Man at Arms. So clearly I went into this episode knowing it was him. And then the way they introduce him in this episode is like, oh, who's this shrouded mystery man? Even though we've been talking about going to see Man at Arms, and also we ended the last episode on him. And I don't think that the writer/writers of this show know how to do like literary tension. Because the whole time we're like, wait, so it's Man at Arms. And it, to the point where I was actually thinking for a second, is it not going to be Man at Arms? Like, is it because this is too obvious? It was just so weird, this whole, like, again, they're treating it like it's an entire season of TV, but really, like, we just saw him 30 seconds ago. And then you're supposed to be like, who's this guy? Who's this new guy? Oh, wait, it's the same guy that we just saw? Okay, well, who's this guy now? Who's this coming up on a boat now? Oh, wait, it's still him? Okay, who's the episode going to be about? The most dangerous? Oh, it's still just him? Like, it's very weird the way they're doing this.
There is a long-form sketch that could be written using this exact theory and premise, and I would love to see it.
We've been doing the show for 6 years, so, like, I've picked up a lot of things, one of which is that a lot of the stuff that sticks out to me is like, this is bad, or it's, you know, it doesn't make sense, or it feels empty, like something's missing. Often comes down to the fact that like a really smart, interesting person is writing a really smart, interesting thing. And then by the time it goes through the machine and, you know, you have a, you know, 21-minute, 19-minute episode of television, like a whole bunch of stuff has been cut out and there's like leftovers. There's stuff that was part of something interesting and bigger and is just sort of like left hanging out there. So like when this sort of thing happens, like all the way through, not just like every once in a while, there's a little bobble and you're like, oh, whoops, that's kind of dumb. Like the whole thing feels like jammed together weirdly. And that's my problem with the tone of this, is it feels all jammed together. I start to wonder if like, did they like have a production schedule and then all of a sudden they're like 6 months behind? You're like, oh God, we're going to take this thing and we only have these pieces. We have the animation from the first draft that we wrote. And now, you know, we're on the third draft, but we only have 2 weeks to get this thing together. So we just have to like cobble it together with stuff because there's so much that just, yeah, like bounces back and forth. It's just like, it doesn't make sense.
But to me, it's been a writing issue throughout. Again, I really like the animation. The voice acting is great. I do really enjoy the mix of like, hey, remember this character now, like, you know, what if their whole life was like fucked up by this major event? I like that. Like, I know that a lot of the complaints about the show were that it either didn't spend enough time on characters that people loved, or it spent like too much time putting them in there and not making it its own thing. I like that. I like the mix of like I was very excited to see Merman here. But to me then, yeah, like there's no substance to it. The writing is like really lacking. To me, it feels like a first draft, to be honest. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that, like, knowing how Netflix does things, knowing that this has, you know, a pretty big name creator and writer behind it, knowing that it's a huge piece of IP that people are looking forward to, I'm going to guess that they gave him a lot of creative control and they didn't cobble it together. So that to me is why I was thinking of this today about how, you know, like we watch cartoons from the 80s and usually I'm the one that's like, this was fine. I liked it. This episode of Gummy Bears was dumb and I liked it. But in 2021, I expect more from my cartoons, especially like in a year that had like Harley Quinn and we've already had like Over the Garden Wall. And even after like Batman, the animated series, which you could argue is very similar to this in that it had a lot of material to pull from beforehand. And it sort of tries to straddle the line between like action and drama. Like after all of those shows, I expect a lot from a new show on TV, like a new cartoon. And to me, this, like, if it was made in 1979, I would be like, all right, well, it's fine. It's a little, the plot's a little thin, the writing's a little weird. But to have this on Netflix, knowing how hard it is to sell shit to Netflix and how much you have to go in with in a pitch, which is basically like, here are all three seasons, here's what the writing's going to be, here's what the episodes are going to be, here's the entire arc. The fact that this is the best that they could do is really surprising to me.
I mean, to be fair, Gina, it's very, very hard to sell a show to Netflix when you're not Kevin Smith. I think you need to add that little addendum onto that, because obviously it's not that hard if you're Kevin Smith.
But I mean, here's the thing. Like, he still, like, I would bet that he still had to go in with the pitch for the entire season and where it, if it's successful, where it goes from there.
Fair.
It's just, yeah, like to me, much like the last episode when I was like, oh yay, like old character, we're seeing a flashback. Like this one, I was like, yeah, cool. Like Merman, they're fighting Merman. And then I was like, ooh, this is going to be interesting. They've got to get to hell. And then the episode ended and I was like, what happened during that episode? Like, yeah. It doesn't stick with me. I'm hungry 10 minutes after eating it.
See, isn't that just mean how delicious it was that 10 minutes later, you're still hungry for more?
No.
Leave them wanting more. Writing tip for all you budding authors out there.
No, I'm eating air. I'm eating scented air that you're trying to tell me is a full meal.
I mean, fair enough. Well, let's break into this episode a little bit. Since we've been talking for like 20 minutes already, we open with a flashback and it's Merman. This is a little bit weird to me because we got Merman on a boat. And Skeletor's there, and they've got Teela and He-Man captured. And what I thought was a little bit weird is that He-Man, who I understand to be the most powerful man in the universe, is being held with his arms behind his back by just two dudes.
Oh, that didn't bother me. I mean,
I thought He-Man was strong.
Yeah, but I mean, like, especially like in the original, they did shit like that all the time, where it was like, oh, you punched him once, and now he's like, he goes flying, but. How does this work?
I think he had some sort of manacles on him with like a little blinking light. So we can assume that some sort of magic thing that binds him, whatevs.
I mean, fair enough. He did break out of it as soon as he got underwater.
I like that this is what bothers you, not the paper thin plot or the weird tone or the writing.
No, I want to make sure the characters
like,
are right.
Why isn't his strength consistent?
No. Listen, I've battled against He-Man on two different episodes of Who Would Win, so I've had to come with full grips at the ridiculous level of power that this character has, that whenever I see him depowered under any circumstances, I get really annoyed because I didn't have to fight that guy. I had to fight the one pushing a goddamn moon out of orbit. you know? And if you could push a moon out of orbit, I just don't think whatever the F Merman is doing there should be enough. That's all. Maybe it's just bitterness. I will say that, like,
the original Merman voice, it was a little bit more fun to me than this one. Like, it always sounded like he was gargling water and speaking at the same time.
All he was doing. Yep.
And this one was just sort of like him, like just a regular voice actor doing sort of a regular voice.
I thought he was so badass, though. I thought this interpretation of Merman, the other one to me was more campy, and this one was a more grounded version of the character.
That's
and I thought
true
this one was
of everything.
Badass.
Everything in the original was campy. I was so excited to see Merman, and I love when he comes back and he's covered in scars, like he got hit by a boat rotor or something.
Yeah, you couldn't have that scarred up dude being all like, blah, blah, blah,
blah, blah. Yes.
Yeah, I wish they had split the difference between the camp and just a straight voice performance.
Yeah, you mean
I could have gone for that.
Replace him with Mermista. And while we're at it, let's replace every character in this show with a better character from the She-Ra reboot.
Oh, shit.
Wow. There it is. Chan dropping the thunder. Skeletor says, let's kill him. And so the fish people jump overboard with Teela and He-Man to drown them, which is a decent plan. That's fine. Man-at-Arms comes out of nowhere, makes the save. And He-Man gets back up into the boat again. And he says to Merman, you're all wet. And it's a line that's so ridiculous, even the show takes a moment to point out how ridiculous it is. That made me happy.
No, that would have been loved hilarious it. In 2012.
Wait, what year is it?
2013.
Oh,
I'm a year late.
Yeah, I didn't mind this. I mean, you know.
Lean
again,
in.
Again,
lean
to
into
me,
it.
To, like, tonally, it's weird that sometimes they're on board with the puns and sometimes they call them out in a tongue-in-cheek way. I wish they would just pick one, either be campy and don't acknowledge it, or sort of be like ironic about it and be like, what a stupid pun. But the fact that they do both in like the same episode has me confused.
That's
it's
what
got me
about
in
it.
Stitches. Thank you. Sorry, Chan. Go ahead.
I'm done.
You cut out a little bit, and I didn't hear what you said.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything you said.
Oh, yeah. That's the tone problem that I have, is the jokes they tell, and then, you know, try and be serious at the same time. And
yeah.
They want to have both of them, and instead of finding a way to meld them together, they just slap them in there. So.
Yeah, I agree. It feels like two different execs were giving notes, and one was like, oh man, you know what this needs? This needs puns, like bad puns, like in the 80s, just like really camp it up. And another exec is just like, you know what this needs? This needs to call out the stupid fucking puns. And then they like decided to split the difference in a weird way. And it's not consistent throughout. And it's a strange thing.
The puns may not be clawful, but they are awful.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. We're breaking up for like the past, you know, 4.5 years.
Yeah.
It made me laugh so hard.
I couldn't hear you because I deafened myself with a knife.
I mean, who could blame you at this point? They all refer to the fact that Man-at-Arms is the actual threat on the team. Evil Lynn even calls it out. And Evil Lynn's just like, yo, everybody knows that He-Man's a clown and Man-at-Arms is the real power. And I'm sort of like, nobody effing thinks that. Stop it. Nobody freaks out when Man-at-Arms shows up.
I appreciate this, though. I appreciate this because I do think that there is, I appreciate whenever there's sort of an old battle scarred guy, like an Aragorn type.
Sure.
And then there's like a younger guy that's sort of, you know, a little bit of a doofus, but he's got all the strength. I like the fact that, you know, you're saying, look, this old guy brings experience to the table. And between the two of them, you'd rather fight He-Man because he's just going to be flailing with his muscles. But Man-at-Arms is going to like, he's going to Batman that shit. He's going to go in advance. He's going to go in advance and set up all these booby traps. And it's just going to be a bloodbath. So I appreciate that. But again, Like, it's like 2 minutes in and they're like, oh, Man at Arms is the most dangerous man in Eternia. And it's like, yeah, we knew the episode was about him. You ended the last episode on him. So now, and then again, we go from that into like, oh, here's a shrouded figure in the courtyard. I wonder who it is. We just said the name Man at Arms, but surely it can't be Man at Arms. I mean, even though he's in the same place that we saw him just like 2 seconds ago at the end of the last episode, ignore that. Now we want you to be like, who's this shrouded man who has the exact same body type and build and is in the same place as Man at Arms? Maybe he's the most dangerous man in Eternia. Oh, right. We already told you that was Man at Arms, but we don't remember how tension works.
Gina, you're saying so many amazing, correct things here. A couple things I want to add. The fact that they got the dude who played Davos in Game of Thrones to play Man at Arms, perfect casting. I love him in this role. I believe him. And he really brings a certain like quiet gravitas to the character that I really liked.
Yeah, he's great. He's great.
Yeah, the other thing to what Gina said is that the flashback features Man at Arms. We have a conversation about how dangerous Man at Arms is. Cut to an old man getting a drink of magic juice or whatever the hell we're calling it, spills it because he's a little feeble, gets stepped in by a guy who's clearly Man at Arms because he's all we've been goddamn talking about this entire episode. He comes in. They don't really try to hide it. We go through an entire fight scene. And at the end of it, to what you said earlier, Gina, everybody's just like, oh, it's Man at Arms.
It's I didn't think that was in doubt at this point. The fact that he keeps his shroud on for the whole fight
doesn't matter.
Like, and then like they reveal it when he like pulls his shroud back and it's like, oh crap, it's Man at Arms. Oh my God, who could have guessed it was Man at Arms? Like,
by God.
Like, again, if this was like five episodes later, if we had thought he was dead, if the audience had sort of forgotten about him, if there wasn't a flashback, if we didn't end the episode, and if it was literally just like you see a feeble old man in the village getting water and someone steps in, who is it? Oh crap. Then you could be like, oh crap, it's Man at Arms. This shrouded figure was Man at Arms the whole time. He's not dead after all. But like, it's just such a weird choice to me to have him fight shrouded, like in mystery and blah, 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 because there's no, and like, again, it's not, this show isn't for little kids. Cause then maybe I could be like, okay, maybe a 4-year-old would be like, who's that? Who's that? But like when you're making a show like this and it's for adults, like, you know, it's, I don't know. It's such a weird choice. Like, I feel like someone pitched this episode and was just like, okay, so the last place you would expect this hero to be is like a dirt poor village, blah, 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 blah. Like, and then you could be like, oh shit, so Man at Arms is in the village. But like, they have very clearly set up that it's Man at Arms. And I just hate it.
Yeah. Look, it's to the, I knew it was Man at Arms. Look, if I picked up on it, that's how you know somebody dropped the ball somewhere. That's all I'll say about that. I also like before that, the Evil Lynn speech about avoid dangerous men. You know, the lady who's up into it with Skeletor. It's a little weird. It's a little weird. She has no self-awareness in that particular regard.
No, she does. That's the whole point, is she's saying, I have been there and I have done that. And then she continues to explicate it later on.
And I will continue to do it. So my advice is worthless.
No. Chan's right. This is supposed to be, again, it's not super successful, but this is supposed to show character growth from what we knew of the original characters. Like, very clearly, the writer/writers were like, okay, so here are the issues in the original. Why would a super powerful sorceress like Evil-Lyn tie herself to this man? Oh, I know. Let's sort of call that out throughout so we can show her character growth. Which is like a great thought, but it's executed poorly. I thought maybe there was supposed to be a layer of she's telling this clearly to a lesbian, and that's sort of the tongue in cheek part where she's like, avoid dangerous men, and then the look that what's her butt gives her is sort of like a bitch, I'm a lesbian. Like, what are you talking about? Of course I avoid dangerous men. I avoid all men.
I didn't pick up on that. See, that was good.
But again, it's like it's hard to tell sort of what's intentional and what's that feels like a first draft of something where someone was like, "Ooh, I know, like let's call out the fact that Evelyn has grown and blah blah blah," but they don't go deep enough for me.
While we're at this point, I feel like my original vibe was that Teela and her friend are in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And now Evelyn is talking about how Teela still holds a candle for He-Man.
Yeah.
And I'm unclear if the intent was to really butch up the character of Teela, but she's not gay, or she is bi, and we're just not going to like delve into that. We're just going to like call it out and then just sort of leave it there. Or it's unclear to me what they're going for.
To me, I thought it was very clear that she's bi and like sort of, you know, sexually a little bit fluid. It reminded me of and this is because I've been rewatching The Walking Dead, but sort of the season where Michonne and what's her butt, the blonde chick.
Blondie Pants, that's her name.
Yeah, Blondie Pants are on the road before they meet the governor. Like it's sort of hinted at the fact that maybe they were keeping each other warm at night, but now that the governor is there, the blonde starts banging him. It's sort of like a, yeah, you know, like end of the world, anything goes type of thing. To me, Teela is a character who, like, if she, like, you know, if she's fighting beside someone, she's gonna eventually like get it on with them. It doesn't matter if it's He-Man or this other chick whose name I refuse to learn.
She fights alongside her father. That's disgusting.
Adopted father. I watched porn about that all the time.
Oh, Jesus. I was hoping we wouldn't go there, but I could always trust Gina would take us there anyway. Oh, that's weird. That's just a whole other subject for a whole other time. But what fucking, why is every video like that now? I don't understand.
It's one of those things that I think it makes somewhat vanilla sexual people feel like, ooh, I'm doing something a little bit naughty, but not really, because even in the porn, like even though they're clearly actors who aren't related at all, but even in the porn, they're like, it's okay, I'm just your stepbrother. But it makes like pretty vanilla people who can't handle, you know, like the harder stuff be like, ooh, this is so naughty.
Wait a minute, you're the one that's watching all of this porn.
I watch everything.
You never know where inspiration is going to come from, Chan.
Yeah, I watch things for narrative purposes, Chan.
Thank you.
And there's no better narratives to be found than in the world of low budget pornography.
You know where they really get dramatic tension, right? Pornhub.
Yeah. You know, 20 years from now,
they will.
20 years from now, when they do the remake, I'll be looking for character growth in the Pornhub videos.
No, they absolutely have to have already made a He-Man porno.
Oh yeah, oh, absolutely. God.
Or are you talking about the porn version of the remake that's out currently? So people who are looking for that nostalgic blast, who remember back to the time when they're having a nostalgic blast.
Yeah, nostalgic blast is also what He-Man says right before he comes in someone's face.
That's really weird, because I wouldn't think that it would be a nostalgic thing for him.
No, he's saying for the person he's blasting on, it's nostalgic for them.
Blast.
I'm just picturing Evelyn having a full-on scene, and then at the end of it, turning to the camera and saying, "I'm a changed person now."
Yeah, I've really grown in this scene. You mean because they really ham it up with the with her dialogue here?
Listen, I'm here for it. I love it all.
Mean to be a borgasm, but I'm about to have an. Oh.
God damn it.
When we see Merman again, I'm going to point out why I'm 100% convinced that he and Evelyn fucked.
Oh, well, hold on. We'll get there in a sec. We got a whole fight scene here going on because, okay, I'm just going to kind of break down the key points and then y'all tell me what you're feeling. Old guy spills the magic cup. Everybody at the village, boo.
you got to spill it. You're a jerk.
Wait, what Ray didn't say is that in keeping with the, oh shit, there's only a few dregs of magic left.
Yes.
This is what everyone in this town goes and sort of tries to fill a cup with magic. So the reason they're so pissed at this old man for dropping it is because it's like some of the only magic left. Right. And it also immediately like sprouts some grass.
That was crazy.
So that's how you know it's magic water.
It's made of magic. And we don't have any new magic coming in. So you have to ration the magic you have. Can't be wasting it. Well, a guy who is clearly man at arms steps in and is like, yo, leave the man alone. He's doing his best here. He's got poop going on. At which point, Triclops and his machine cult show up. And that was rad. Big old fight with these whip people and the hooded robes. And gosh, they got him. Triclops and his crew gets him. He gets Evil Lynn. He gets not Man at Arms. He gets Teela. He gets other lady. And out of nowhere, like, who's going to make the save? And it's Beast Man. Yo, Beast Man, FT dubs. Yeah. Beast Man comes in and just starts wrecking people. And he tells Triclops, he's just like, hey, you know, you're messing with her, assumingly Evil Lynn. And he says, you mess with her, you mess with me. You don't want to mess with me. Maybe it's time to go. And Triclops is like, I agree with you. So they just leave. And then we get a big reveal, you guys.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
He-Man. Beastman is no match for Battle Armor He-Man.
Beastman, Battle Armor He-Man, and Skeletor each sold separately.
Take that!
Just a dent.
And that!
He-Man.
More dents. But look!
They're gone!
Only He-Man has this power.
Oh, yeah?
Battle Armor Skeletor has it, too.
Now the real fun begins.
Battle Armor Skeletor and He-Man figures each sold separately from the Masters of the Universe collection. Beastman figure also sold separately from Mattel.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
That dude who looked just like and acted just like Man at Arms is Man at Arms.
What? What?
Wow.
No way. We haven't seen him in like at least 30 seconds. That's a good reveal. I was excited to see Beastman. Beastman was always sort of one of my favorites. And also in the live action movie was so fucking terrifying.
Oh.
When he's sort of like trying to grab Courtney Cox and he's screaming right next to her face and shit like that. Like he's a cool ass character. I also appreciate this ongoing thing of like friends become enemies, enemies become friends.
Yeah.
Like the fact that they all fought on the same side at some point, but now he's still loyal to Evelyn and Triclops is like, yo, what up, homie? Like, what's the deal? Like, we're buds. And he's like, if you're not down with my bitch, you're not down with me. So get out of here. Triclops is like, all right, if that's the way you want to be, I'm out.
It was weird. Generative in Sound Pool when Beastman says, if you're not down with my bitch, you're not down with me. I don't know if you can pull that, Chan, but it was. I was blown away.
I like this. I like, and also as soon as he shows up, you realize, oh crap, he's going to join their crew, which I'm all in for. I love dopey Beastman just sort of being there and being the muscle. I'm into it.
I want Evil Lynn talking shit, but I don't want her like also cashing the checks that her words are writing. I want somebody else to be the one to step in for her. Beastman fits that role perfectly. You know, it's like I don't want to see Bobby Heenan fight people all the time, but having Andre the Giant fight people while Bobby Heenan talks shit, now we're talking, right? That's the jam. They ask Man at Arms. They say, we need you to weld the new power sword together. We need somebody who can do that. Not many people can do that. You're one of them. Please come with us.
So you just immediately skip over the weirdness of Duncan like flinging off his robe and then like getting down on his knees. Please take me back, baby. Tina, baby, I'm sorry. I swear I'm not going to hit you again. Then she calls him Duncan because that's a real normal
thing. Weird.
Calling your dad by his first name.
Real weird. Yeah, okay, fair.
Like, I mean, I get that we're trying to shorthand that she is very unhappy with him and his behaviors, but it just doesn't. That's one of those things. Like tonally, it just rings false. It doesn't. These don't seem like people.
It didn't feel right. I'll go with that.
Devices.
Yeah, well, I agree. And again, the whole quote unquote reveal of Man at Arms thing was not cool. I do enjoy the reveal that, like, since Orko is a purely magical creature, now he's essentially an emaciated skeleton that's dying.
No. Yeah, I mean, there's the actual reveal right there, because Man at Arms says, yo, I got to get this cup of magic juice back. This is my priority. When we do that, I'll talk to you about whatever other nonsense you want to talk about. We get back to his place, and it's Orko who needs the magical drink because he is having a rough time. He tries to, like, just do a very basic light incantation, and it turns into a cloudy, rainy mess. And he's like, yo, I just suck right now. In my head, I was like, Orko, you've always sucked. What is,
yeah,
this is not new.
Yeah.
This is how bad your magic has always been. This isn't because you're weak on any stretch of the imagination. You know, this is like me saying, man, I'm just not as virile and not as able to go into working out situations as I used to. Oh man, it must be all of that, all that non-wrestling. And it's like, no, that's not really the reason why, right?
Yeah, I will say that, like, it this moment doesn't hit quite as hard because he successfully completes the spell and then it turns, which is the whole point of his character. Like, it always happens. Like, to me, if he tried the spell and it didn't work at all, like you know, he couldn't even get the little ball of sun going, like, maybe that would have been a little sadder or something. But legitimately, I was like, oh, is this supposed to... Like, the image of him is so shocking because he's so skinny and bony and he looks so sick that then they immediately cut it with him being like, here's a spell. Oh, it's crappy, which is like what he used to do. I want to see him fucking, like, you know, pus at the corners of his mouth dying.
Holy
and then
shit.
don't cut it with the humor of like, oh, his shitty spell. He's got another shitty spell. Like, maybe have him try it and then fail instead. But yeah, to me, I was like, oh, you're trying to have this serious moment of crap. This dude is almost dead. Because I do think it's cool. He goes on a whole thing where he's like, please let me come with you. And they're like, no, you're useless. And he's like, I was only ever really happy when I was fighting. And so I was like, oh shit, are they going to kill Orko? Which they still might. Which to me would be cool as hell, but all the tension is like taken out when he's like, here's a little ball of sun. Oh no, it turned into a rain cloud. And I'm like, fuck you, dude. Like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I don't think I quite want to see pus coming out of his eyes, but, like, you know,
I
seeing
said
a weak
of
Orko.
His mouth, thank you very much.
Oh, sorry, my bad.
I don't know the history. Gina actually pitched a He-Man reboot to Netflix.
Oh shit.
In which she wanted to use Orko as a really strong AIDS crisis metaphor.
Oh my god.
Set the whole thing in 1980s America, where Skeletor was Ronald Reagan and Orko was dying of AIDS, and so, like, she had a whole thing with, like, pus and, you know, like, hooked up to IVs and stuff like that, and it was moving and was powerful, definitely, but not maybe quite what they were going for.
I mean, to be fair, the title of it was Orko's Pussy, and I just don't think it read on the screen the way she intended it to.
Yeah,
I did there.
If you're gonna show Orko and you want us to think he's dying, don't have him be his same old stupid self with, like, spells that go wrong and shit like that.
I mean, fair enough. I mean, he does drink the magic drink and he's feeling a little bit better, you know, and that, you know, and his voice very clearly is conveying somebody who's just getting beat down right now. So, if they want to take the impossible task of make me care about Orko, I welcome it. This is like somebody trying to do a rehab on Jar Jar Binks, and maybe somebody someday will go for it and maybe they'll get it right. Or like the Dungeons and Dragons movie trying to make me feel sad that a Wayans brother dies. Like, look, these are impossible tasks and I credit somebody even trying.
But here's the thing. That's what I'm saying. When we see Orko and he's laying down and he's emaciated, I was, like, concerned for Orko. And then they immediately cut the legs out from under that by having him do a stupid spell that, like, goes wrong again.
They do a bit, yeah.
And that to me is part of the tonal problem here, is that they're not letting you live with anything before they're like, Like, to me, it's like watching an inexperienced improv scene where someone comes out and they initiate. The next person who like is in the scene is like panicking because they're like, maybe that didn't work. Let's all of a sudden make their like now there's dinosaurs out here. And then the first guy is like, fuck, oh, fuck, there's dinosaurs. Okay, is that funny? No, let's change to like spacemen. And you're like, what am I focused on and why do I care?
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I think we've tapped the Orko well long enough. Let's move forward. They asked Man at Arms to go on their journey, and he says, no, I will not do that. I'm here with my family and my family adjacent, to which point we meet Roboto, who I do not remember from the original series. I do not remember this character.
But I also don't.
Yeah. There was a famous song by Styx about it, if I recall.
Yeah, and I'm not sure they're talking about the same guy, but now I want them to have been.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. And here's the thing. Like, I will say, you know, my brother and I were pretty big He-Man fans, and we had a lot of the toys. Absolutely. And I don't remember Roboto, and they treat him like we do all remember him. Like they, like it's very much a Teela says like, oh wait, you know, like maybe we don't need Man at Arms. If he's the only one that knows how to reforge this, here's Roboto and he's got all his memories. And I was like, wait, what? Who the fuck is this guy? Like he's got all his memories. And he's like, you made me, and this is just an info dump. Mr. Roboto is like, you made me when you were a younger man, so therefore I am impulsive like the younger you. But if you knew how when you were younger to reforge this thing, then I also have the knowledge to reforge it. And it's like, okay, info dump. Who is this? Like you're treating him like he's Beastman or Merman, but I also did not remember who the hell he was.
Also a fun note is Justin Long of the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC commercials does the voice of Roboto. I know he's been in it like other things, but that's really where I want him to stay. Just put it out there.
I liked that. That was what I liked about Roboto. I was like, hell yeah, Justin Long, here we go.
He did a good job. He did a good job. No, I make fun because he made that Die Hard movie I wish didn't happen. But, you know, what a performer. I'm so excited that he has success and can be doing a good job as Roboto.
This whole thing of him talking about his family, because that's what this whole scene is like. I can't go because I have built this family and I need to take care of him and all that. And he gets called out by Teela, who's like, oh, yeah, well, all you ever cared about was taking care of the royal family. You didn't give a shit about me.
That hurts.
Then what makes that previous scene even worse, where he's just like, oh, I'm so sorry. And he gets down on his knee and I beg forgiveness and all of this jazz. Because now we have multiple instances where he indeed cares about his like whatever family and doesn't give a shit about Teela.
Yeah. But also like she's first of all, she's his adopted daughter. So like good on him for adopting her in the first place when she's not really like his daughter. And second of all, like again, everything about this is weird because I don't know if I'm supposed to empathize with him and be like, oh, cut him a break, Teela. Like, he was your adopted father and he taught you how to fight and did all this cool stuff and gave you opportunities at the palace and you were going to be the new like man at arms and like that's all really cool stuff that he did for you. Or if I'm supposed to be like, look at this old asshole. He made a robot of himself because he was like lonely. Like, what's going on here? Like, I wish I would have done that at a young age. Even character wise, tonally, I'm not sure. I'm not sure who I'm supposed to be thinking is in the wrong here. Like, is Teela in the wrong for not forgiving him and for like, because I admit I read right before we podcasted, I read a review where, you know, a female reviewer was saying, I'm really sick of this shit where it's like a woman character who has everything going for her. Which, you know, at the beginning it was she was getting a promotion. She was really happy. And then like one thing makes her throw it all away. With that one thing being that everyone lied to her. And this reviewer was saying like, like, give me a break. This is feeding into the stereotype that women are rash. Like, she's built her whole career. And now, because she feels like, oh, they kept this one secret from me, I'm throwing it all away and I'm renouncing my adopted father who took care of me. So on the one hand, yeah, like, I'm like, come on, bitch. Like, just forgive your dad. Like, he kept a secret for a reason. It's not as bad as you think. And on the other hand, I'm like, man in arms, like, what are you doing? Your daughter is here asking for your help. And you're like, no, I need to help my robotic son that I created, who's really just me. So it's a weird, like, ego thing. Like, I don't know who to focus on here.
That is weird.
3 minutes earlier, he's like, I will do anything to win you back. And now he's like, except, you know, go on a trip with you.
Yeah, except the one thing. And then like, to then get the rug pulled out almost immediately again of him, like, being like, yes, I will go with you. And she's like, no, hold up. I just thought of a way better idea. I'm going to send you on this mission. He's like, but I don't want to go. And she's like, promise me you'll go. And he's like, okay. And then he's like, I lied again. I didn't really go, even though you were, like, technically my superior when we were at the, like, I didn't go. And now I'm here to, like, save your butt. But then I'm going to immediately leave again. It's just so, it's exhausting.
There's a lot of weird back and forth that happens here, because and to just lay out the bullet points here, Gina, you did a great job right there, but just to restate. They want Man at Arms to go with them on this mission to hell. And he says, I got to go back to these people first. They go, great. So he goes back and reveals that it's Orko and his robot that he made, his C-3PO, basically, of himself. And
who
they
he,
say
who
now
he's treating like a son.
Who he's treating like a son. And that's great. You know, some would argue that adopted children are just as loved, Gina. So
hold on. Adopted child is one thing. Building one that is a carbon copy of yourself is a little bit different. I mean,
I would argue, like, there's no difference whatsoever.
Oh shit! Did we just learn that Luna's a robot?
Yeah.
Don't worry about that.
No wonder yourself a child, Ray.
Look, I had to do something. So they ask Man at Arms, can you join us? He says, no, I have to be here with my family. To which Teela's like, oh, fuck you, old man. Like,
yeah.
What the F? At which point Orko says, actually, I'm into this trip. Roboto says, I'm also into this trip because I can do the shit that you're asking Man at Arms to do. At which point Man at Arms goes, okay, fine. I have no reason to stay because my family is going. I will go to protect my family. And Teela just pulls out a giant brass pair of testicles. And she's like, actually, Man at Arms, fuck you. You don't get to see your family. I'm sending you somewhere totally else, to Castle Grayskull, even though you've just expressed the only thing you want is to be with your family. And now that they're coming, fuck you. And I'm just like, wow, this is outrageous. And then to find out in the next scene, Man at Arms didn't even do what he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
This is bizarre.
You know, what's weird also is that, yeah, to me, honestly, it's like a first-time writer with ADD wrote this show, because at no point has Teela mentioned that she's concerned about the sorceress. Like, if it was an ongoing thing that they were worried about, if she was saying, like, oh my God, like, how are we going to keep the sorceress safe and go to hell, blah, 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 blah. And so they try and sort of jam it in there of like, hey, listen, Triclops just attacked here because he's like getting them. He wants to kill magic. You know who else is magic? The sorceress. We can't just leave her on her own. But like, they already saw that Triclops was doing this before this episode. So to me, that's just a sort of thing where again, like, she came here with a very specific mission. At no point was the sorceress mentioned. The very specific mission was, the only one who can reforge this is Man at Arms. So we have to get him to come with us to hell so he can reforge this. And then it's, okay, he's not coming. Okay, you know, this other thing that can do it is coming, which also, like, they don't even know. Isn't it better just to have two of them anyway? Like, what if Roboto gets killed along the way? Or, like, Roboto isn't even sure. He's just like, if you have the knowledge, then I probably have this knowledge. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Teela's like, oh, crap, you know what? I totally forgot about the sorceress. yeah, you know what? Go do that. Go do that instead. Even though we came here specifically to get you, clearly we need some sort of narrative device to separate us again, because for some reason we can't just all go down to hell and have that be the plot. So you go do this thing. And then another very, very stupid thing happens.
Hold on, hold on. I'm pretty sure I know what it is.
Yep.
Because as much as I hate the scene up until this point, that wasn't even the worst part of it. And also, bearing in mind, we're closing in on an hour. We're not even halfway through this goddamn episode. So we should probably
pull
back on the...
Yeah, a lot of it is just a battle scene coming up, so...
Yeah.
Man-at-Arms has some things to say.
Mm-hmm. I said no more secrets, so there's something I have to tell you.
Oh, no. We don't have time for any more family feuds. The Orb Ember is at almost half the height it burned only yesterday.
A story for another time, then.
What?
I can't believe they let her get away with that.
Yeah. Again, and he's obviously going to tell her, like, yo, your mom is the sorceress. You're sending me to, like, protect her. No more secrets.
Oh, you think that's the secret?
Yeah, Ray, that is obviously the secret.
I thought he was going to tell her, like, if you visualize something and make a wish board, it will come true. I thought that was the secret.
But, like, you know, which is, like, such a ham-handed thing, because, like, the last episode was when the sorceress is like, I wanted to see you one more time. And she was like, me? Why me? And then it's like, no time. No time to explain it right now that I'm your mom. And then now he's like, I need to tell you. And then, God, it's just so derivative. It's like, it's just so, I don't know. Again, it seems like someone had an idea of how TV shows are written, and they're like, oh, there's some big secret. But, like, for some reason they can't. We'll figure out later why, but for some reason they can't reveal it. And then a story for another time, perhaps? It's like, bitch, either don't bring it up or just tell her right now. Like, don't be like, hey, speaking of the sorceress and secrets. It's just terrible.
Also, this whole fucking thing happened because they were keeping secrets. Tila, like, flipped out because there were secrets. Why would she then be like, oh, there's another secret you didn't tell me? Oh, well, that's probably not important. Let's go.
Yeah.
You couldn't spend 15 seconds and be like, by the way, here's a secret that I have. And it could be anything. It could be like, I molested you when you were two.
Jesus.
That's something that only takes about 10 seconds to say. And like, yeah, sure, they got to figure out the ramifications of it. But like, if it was important enough to say something, fucking say it.
Yeah. Either say it or don't bring it up and wait until the end. Like,
it was worth bringing up in the first place. It's worth taking the 10 seconds to say. I am with both of you on that.
Yeah. And I mean, the rest of the episode is nothing. They go on the water. They get attacked. Here's Merman.
Gina, I believe I could paint a much more flowery picture of it than that.
No,
first
I'm telling
off, okay?
You, that's what it is.
So, guys, here's what happens next. They go on the water, and then they get attacked. See, when I say it, there's a lot more gravitas.
No.
They go to a place called, yes, Chan.
We're going
to
talk about Evil Lynn, because this is one of those things where, like, if it were a show that was well-balanced and paced and, you know, like a paid homage, while at the same time creating new worlds, I would be all about this moment.
Uh-huh.
But the fact that it's just a collection of shit that's just shoveled into a dumpster and then thrown out at us. Evil Lynn takes her helmet off and she has long flowing white hair. What is that?
That was rad. Yeah. It would have been a cool moment,
except I don't care about any of these people.
I did have a moment where I was like, oh, cool. And then she goes into, like, you know, a month ago, I was really into Skeletor. but then, like, in this past month, when you haven't seen the interesting part, which is the character growth, I think that's one of my issues here, is that a lot of this, it feels to me like a writer who said, like, God, writing character growth in a real way is so hard. Let's skip over it and just have them do, like, info dump that shows that they grew as a character. Because seeing the aftermath of, like, seeing Evelyn realize, oh my God, I attached myself to this man who used me, and like, I could have been super powerful. Like, seeing her you know, wander around for a while after he's gone, not knowing who she is, sort of go through those post like abusive relationship breakup moments, and then come out the other side, sort of like Carol on The Walking Dead, where the first season you see her, you know, she's her husband's like beating her and shit like that.
Very submissive.
And then it slowly shows her like after her daughter dies and all this shit. But this is just Evelyn being like, hey, remember like 20 minutes ago when you saw me in that episode and I was totally devoted to Skeletor? I have since realized that that was dumb. And I'm actually more powerful than him. And if I hadn't hitched my wagon to his, I could have been the most powerful sorceress in this land. So basically what I'm saying is, ladies, be your own kind of woman. And then Teela's like, yeah, I don't want your advice because I'm going through some shit too. And Evelyn's like, okay, here's my long flowing hair. Oh, crap, we're being attacked. Character growth moment over.
Yeah, I was convinced she was about to bust into a burlesque number to show her fierce independence, and unfortunately,
poor unfortunate souls,
merman attacks.
Real quick, this is important to me, and so I'm going to take this moment to
do it.
The obvious that I could have been a master of the universe.
I can't wait to get out of Africa, Meryl.
Oh,
there it is.
Is that not a
nope?
The fucking Upright Citizens Brigade.
Not familiar. Is that a music group?
They have a sketch. I think it's in a video store where a guy is like, you know, I had the titular line in that movie. I'm like, what? No, you didn't. And so he like puts in a, like a tape of Out of Africa, and it's, you know, Out of Africa. And then it gets to like a little hand cam of him saying like, I can't wait to get out of Africa, Meryl. Meryl Streep is in the film. Yeah, cool. So 20-year-old sketch comedy references don't play here?
Only the state. If you would have said, like I want to dip my balls in it, I would have been on board.
Yeah, I feel like I very vaguely remember this.
Fucking know who the Upright Citizens Brigade is, living in Los Angeles and doing comedy for the past 10 to 15 years.
Wait, so is that Colbert? Yeah. Who?
Fuck y'all.
I have Matt Besser's crib in my nursery. So yes, I'm aware of the Upright Citizen Brigade. I do not remember that sketch.
One of the episodes of his show, maybe.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was a show.
Ass
okay.
Pennies? Is this about ass pennies?
Ass pennies. Oh, okay, I do know ass pennies.
See, Jan, you just gotta know your audience. If he went with, if he knows I want to dip my balls in it, he's gonna know ass pennies.
And Gina is nailed it on both accounts. Look, and I don't think we call back enough to I want to dip my balls in it. Louie, who uses his catchphrase over and over again, one of the greatest ideas in sketch comedy history, I will point out. And I love Ken Marino for it. I'll say it right now. Great bit. I sat two rows behind him at a theatrical performance once, and you know what? We did not talk. But I was like, shit, that's Ken Marino. That's the I want to dip my balls in it guy. And then the whole time I had to be like, don't do it. Don't in the middle of this live theatrical production shout, I want to dip my balls in it, because no one, especially Ken Marino, will appreciate it.
I bet he would. He seems like a lovely guy.
He was a lovely guy. I never talked to him, but he was a lovely guy that I still don't think the bit would have worked. Not until I workshopped it a few more times. Anyway, we got some great lines coming up here. I know that this is gonna be a longer episode. Look, we have a lot to say about Merman. Merman knocks out the engines, and so they're a little bit adrift. That's fine. At one point, he is called by, I believe Evelyn calls him a traitorous trout.
Yeah.
Chan, I loved it. Man at Arms makes the save again because Merman's about to win, but then they defeat Merman and then I'll make an offer to him. They say, if you can get us to Subternia, we will set you free and let you live. He's like, yo, I can agree to that. And then he gets them to the gate. They let him go. He does a whole like villain thing where he pops back up out of the water and is like, I'm going to get you next time. The sea never forgets. And I was like, that's fucking cool. You've got one eye now, you know. And then somebody immediately afterwards makes a fish, because that was fishy, and I am not gonna lie, I loved it. I don't care how tonally wrong it was. And I, Chan, I can't believe you're not on board with this. This is your entire life.
Oh man. I feel like those are fighting words.
My craft, my art isn't just something to be bandied about like so much hubba bubba bubble gum. I was honestly trying to remember the name of Bazooka.
Bazooka Joe, 5 cent bubble gum.
Yeah. For some reason, my brain dredged up Hubba Bubble Bubble Gum.
Which is a much more obscure reference at this point.
Much more. Much more.
Like, also, not even close.
The Big League Chew?
You're in the big leagues. When you make a perfect slide, you're in the big leagues.
Oh,
when
shit.
You block a shot or two, you're in the big leagues. When you're into Big League Chew, there's another song that apparently is still stuck in my brain from when I was six.
They really knew how to do jingles back then.
It's concerning.
Well, to be fair, advertising was a thing back in that era too.
I mean,
so much anymore.
I have to feel like all of the QAnon nutsos, like you think like, man, these people are really stupid. And at the same time, there's some stuff embedded in my brain that should not ever be there.
I think it's great.
Do you?
Are we going to do a thing on like, great,
Gina? I don't think that's a good thing.
Having half your brain occupied by cereal jingles like I have for the past couple weeks is great.
I feel like the difference between cereal jingles and Fox News headlines is perilously thin, and I don't want to slip.
Well, this is a thing I wonder sometimes, because you know they do like, hey, remember the 80s? Hey, remember the 90s? These shows, and they'll show like My Buddy commercials, and then people are like, oh shit, and they're singing along. Like, what are people going to do? Hey, remember the 2020s? It's going to be like, shit, remember when this banner ad flashed at the bottom of your email? Like, advertising and jingles are not at all what they used to be. There's nothing memorable about any of this stuff anymore. It's all like 10 second plugs of just like, hey, we're here really quick, buy our thing, okay, bye. And it's we're very much living in the future now, because that art form seems to me to be dead.
I mean, it's all good. We'll all be dead in the next like 5 years or so. So it's not like any jingles now would have a chance to stick with us for that long.
Gina, we cannot be killed before we get to G.I. Joe Resolute. I'm going to start right now. I'll be very upset.
I'm mad that you told me to plan a trip for 9 years in the future, knowing that we'd all be dead in five.
Oh, gee, that's cool. I mean, cool.
You have to have something to look forward to, even if you never get to it.
That's a writer right there.
Basically put me into the role of the guy in the movie who's like, I'm just trying to make it home. I'm trying to make it home to see my wife and kid. And I'm going to be dead. I'm going to be dead. And you could have chosen someone else. You could have chosen someone we didn't. You could have chosen Ray. Ray could have been the one.
Chose not to.
No, look, you gave me that backstory.
Look, literally before we podcasted tonight, I watched the episode of The Walking Dead where Glenn dies. And
is that why this entire episode has just been inundated with, like, you remember on The Walking Dead with
I was wondering what was up.
Yeah, I clearly said I've been rewatching The Walking Dead. And it's the episode where Glenn dies, which is horrendous. And he's gurgling as he dies. It's one of the worst.
Is it when he fake dies or real dies?
It's when he real dies. Okay. And his eyeball pops out. I remember when he fake dies. Which, like, y'all know I have eyeball issues, but he's gurgling, Maggie,
that shit was gross.
I'll find you. And it's like, bitch, no, you won't. You are dead. But a couple minutes before, Maggie said to Rick, like, I trust you, Rick. I know you'll get us there. And I was like, damn, this show is great about not giving a crap who says what.
I will never forget, because Glenn in The Walking Dead, really quick, is the actual reason that I came up with the 24-hour spoiler rule that I'm so insistent upon. And that's because that episode when he fake died, right, when we all thought he was dead, but he wasn't really. It was like that episode aired at 9 p.m. here on the West Coast. At 6:30 p.m., in the West Coast, where it had already aired a bit on the East Coast. The episode hadn't even finished on the East Coast yet, hadn't even come on here in the West Coast. And one of my idiot Facebook friends posted, so Glenn died. Am I supposed to care anymore?
Yeah, your friend
sucks.
And I just
remember being like, fuck you, dude. The episode that you're watching hasn't even finished yet. It hasn't even started. And I don't know if you know this, Facebook doesn't differentiate by time zones when it comes to postings.
Yeah, I hope you immediately unfollowed that friend. Also, like, people who read the comics know that that Glenn dies from Lucille, so I don't know about that.
Well, that's why when there's a, and I won't spoil it, they kill a second character in that same scene before they kill Glenn.
Yeah.
And that was like, ooh, are they twisting it up from the comics? Oh shit, that's an interesting choice. Oh shit, then they went ahead and killed Glenn.
Yeah, that was like, that was some smart
that
writing.
That made the moment work. Yeah,
that was some smart writing, because when he's doing eeny, meeny, miny, moe, and you're like, well, come on, we all know it's going to be Glenn, and then it's not Glenn, you're like, oh, Glenn's too popular a character, I guess. He's too, everyone loves it. Oh my God, they killed him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very successful moment.
That was great. It's like the moment in Mr. Robot when everyone knew Christian Slater was a figment of his imagination.
Speaking
of bad
writing.
He had already given many interviews where he said, like, yeah, this show is like Fight Club. And you're like, oh, okay, so Christian Slater is his dead dad and he's imagining him. But then they bury the lead because he kisses his sister and she's like, did you forget who I was? And it's like, oh, shit. Everyone was so focused on this thing that we didn't even know that, like, this chick was your sister the whole time.
Yeah, I gave up on that show.
And then Pornhub had a whole new category of porn the next day.
Oh, Jesus Christ. And we come full circle.
Over an hour, and we're talking about Walking Dead and Mr. Robot, a USA original.
Here's the thing. We're over an hour in, but there's literally 20 seconds left. They fucking go and they walk into hell. That's the 20 seconds left.
You know, let me just finish out this episode then. We get to the gate of Subternia.
We're not even talking about Chan.
What the hell are we doing?
Fucking man at arms holds out his hand for a handshake, and Tila hugs him like it's fucking 1976. And we're watching an episode of, I don't know, Simon and Simon or some shit, like before peak TV for sure.
I know what you're saying. It was wonderful. Like, we don't see this shit anymore.
Because here's the thing. To me, it's because he didn't want to cross a boundary. He knew she was pissed at him. So rather than go for the hug, which they probably usually do, he was saying, okay, I'll shake your hand, you know, Mrs., because I don't want to cross your boundaries. And this was her being like, I forgive you. The fact that you disobeyed me and lied to me again and said that you were going to go protect the sorceress like I ordered you to, but then for some stupid reason, you came and followed us on the boat. And now that you're here, you're not even going to walk with us into hell, which is the real dangerous part, which makes no sense. Like, he disobeyed orders because he was like, I have a feeling that the water is going to be dangerous. And then they're like, cool, Merman's so we're going into hell now. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to go back and do that sorceress thing that you told me. And it's like, oh, okay, so hell's less dangerous than the open water is what you're saying?
But isn't that a direct callback to the thing that happened in episode one at the party, where I forget which one it was, but one of them is going for the regular protocols and the other goes for the hug, and we're just doing that again two episodes later. So what a callback, really.
Or is it a callback to just a few minutes ago when he rolls in Han Solo Millennium Falcon style and frees them from the Mer people?
I dig it. Well, here's the deal. They get to Subternia, Chan, and it turns out that the ram skull that Evil Lyn's been holding goes on this like skeleton body, which opens up the gate. It's a switch. Tila starts being real weird. They open the gate to Subternia. They've gotten all the way here, and she all of a sudden gets weird. Just now, I'm just saying. Not before, just now. Mm-hmm. And she turns to everybody. He's like, I understand if you guys wouldn't want to come any further. And it's like, who the fuck is this for? Like, literally, everybody came with you this far. Everybody has said, we're on board to go to Subternia. And then at the end, she's like, I'd understand. Like, who's saying no right now? You know what? I can see Orko being like, actually, you know what? You're right. I'm just going to wait here at the gate of Subternia with Merman next door, who already vowed revenge. I'm sure that's going to go well for me.
Yeah, this again feels like a moment of someone with like severe ADD who watches a lot of TV And it's like, oh, you know what we should do? Oh, we should do one of those moments where you're like, it's going to be dangerous here. So if you're not on board, that's fine. Turn back now, without any regard for whether or not it fits the situation or the characters. That's what this is. This is someone being like, oh, yeah. It'd be cool. It would be cool if someone was like, oh, if you're afraid, turn back now. Instead, it's like, Orko insisted on coming. This whole trip was Evelyn's idea. So she's obviously going. Yep. You know, you've got this no-name chick whose name I refuse to learn, who like isn't really a character unless she's on this quest.
It's Andra, just for the record. I looked it up.
I don't want to learn it.
No, I said it just to upset you.
You know, she's not even a character unless she's on this quest. And
you
then
need a poster, Gina? Do you need us to make a poster?
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Just put it on your wall.
Yeah. But yeah, this is a moment where someone's like, oh, you know what I always liked when I was a kid? In movies where someone gave people a chance to back out, but then they all doubled down on the fact that they're doing this together. And like another writer's like, that doesn't really fit here. I don't care. Put it in.
And they did. And then the one moment of intrigue happens because everybody goes down the thing. Evil Lynn doubles back, grabs the ram skull, and then goes down, which means that she's closing the gate behind them. That's an interesting choice. Either she knows something or she just doesn't want to be without the skull. So maybe that character development, you know, because that is the Havoc staff from Skeletor's, you know, that's what that is. It's the head of the staff.
Yeah.
So maybe the character development's not quite as developed as she wants us to think it is.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell this moment is supposed to mean, to be honest. I rewound it because I thought I missed something, because I was just like, all right, is this like, are they implying that she's double crossing them? Because if she's locking them in hell, then she's locked in there too. Or is this supposed to say that she's been paying lip service to the fact that she's over Skeletor, because this is like a token of him when he was alive that she's going back for it? Of all the things that they like make way too obvious throughout the rest of the episode, where they're like, oh yeah, look, it's Man at Arms. Bet you didn't know that. This actual moment that needs some clarification has none.
Yes.
So again, I'm like, figure out what you are, TV show. Are you something that has these intriguing moments that you then pay off later when people are going to be like, oh, so that's what it meant? Or are you a show that like really hammers shit in and like leaves no room for, because it's a little bit of both. And I'm frankly annoyed.
I mean, I saw it as great writing. You know, finally we have some dramatic tension of that thing that Gina's been missing, and she gets mad that we have it. There we go. You can't make TV's Gina Ippolito happy. That's what
I'm
I've
just saying.
Learned.
It's not, if I don't know what it means and if it doesn't really mean anything, that's
how
not
would you
dramatic.
Ever watch Lost? How did you ever watch
no,
Lost?
No, because that's the exact opposite of this. That was tonally consistent throughout. I wonder if they're going to bring that back later. This is like, I mean, this means nothing to me. I don't know why it's supposed to be important.
Well, I mean, I guess we'll find out. Episode. The best part about this is that I've seen all five episodes and I don't remember why it's important.
That's what Yeah.
So here's the deal. We'll all find out together. Cool.
It's a deflated turkey is what it is.
The most powerful man in Eternia. Episode 3, the merman episode.
It's the most dangerous man. The most dangerous man in the world.
Why? What did I say?
The most powerful man, which now we know that you
man.
Equate power with danger.
But also check out our interview with Buzz Dixon talking about the most dangerous man in the world. A wonderful thing. You can buy it like a Kindle version of it. You can buy it online. I will try to find links to that. If you haven't read his G.I. Joe story, that is just, I loved it. I thought it was just wonderful. Get on it. Get on this. And I'm not just saying that because we love Buzz Dixon, but also we love Buzz Dixon. So all of this is true.
Indeed.
Anything else you guys want to say before we get out of this unbelievably, honestly, long episode that we've done today?
I mean, I will say, you know, like I like it a little bit more each time I see it. I just wish they would figure out the writing.
For the last two episodes of this He-Man Enterprise that we're going on, I'm probably going to be watching Umbrella Academy, I think, maybe. I don't know. I might switch up and watch Picard. But while you're talking about this He-Man show, I will be thinking about a completely different show and have very little contribute, if anything.
I mean, what's different?
Nothing.
Oh, shit. No,
if it's not complaining about puns, Robert Clark Chan, I know you tune me out.
I am tonally consistent.
I mean, that's, you know what? Yeah. And to be fair, it will add dramatic tension. When will Chan have something else to say? Maybe never.
I feel like he's holding off because I'm talking so much crap about it.
Honestly, yes.
Yeah. All right. Next episode, I won't talk any crap. I'll just...
No, it's fine because you're covering all of the bases. I'm not just going to jump in and like, yes, what Gina said, but I'm going to say it a little more stridently and like maybe with a fun accent.
Wait a minute.
Magora, this show is shite.
Chan, you just described half my act. How dare you? Well, anyway, guys, that is He-Man Episode 3, The Most Dangerous Man in Eternia. We're going to go back to G.I. Joe next week. We're getting pretty close to the end of Season 1 of G.I. Joe Extreme already.
We're
not. We got like 4 episodes to go. We're 9 deep right now. You know, that's pretty good. We're making good headway into it.
Is there a Season 2 of it? There's a Season 2?
Yes, in fact, there are 13 more episodes once we finish the initial 13.
Okay.
That will be Season 6. Season 6? Are we going to call it Season 6 of Knowing? Or are we just going to keep going with Season 5 till Extreme's over? I don't know. It's Extreme either way. It's Extreme either way. Thank you so much for listening. Here are some links that you can get a hold of. What am I even talking about right now? We got facebook.com/knowingishalfthepodcast. Join our Facebook group if you'd like to. patreon.com/knowingishalfthepodcast. I know for a fact, whether it's going to happen this week, next week, what have you, we are going to do another Saturday show, I'm sure. Maybe we wait till Chan comes home from New York. Maybe we don't. We got to actually talk about this. Maybe I shouldn't be saying it so stridently on the air right now before I've ever had that conversation. I don't know, but we're going to try to do it one of these upcoming Saturdays because you, the people, have earned it. Book 4 of Find Your Fate, G.I. Joe, Choose Your Own Adventure style stories, Operation Robot Assassin, and they got Bazooka right on the cover. You know this one's going to be good. I don't know that, but you feel like this one's going to be good. They're really going to get it right this time. Just like all the other times, quite honestly. So patreon.com/knowingishalfthepodcast. For $5, you could join our Patreon and get the super secret vault, as well as join us when we do that show. Why would you not want that? Everybody's loving it so far. People are having a really good time with it, and it's a lot of fun. Chan, Gina, do you have any projects or other shows you'd like to plug before we get out of here?
I got nothing.
There's a really nice Cuban place right up the street here. I don't remember which street it's on. Also don't remember the name of it, but my goodness, they have a fine Cuban sandwich.
Mm. Chan, I am glad that I am a shameless self-promoter because you are GD impossible. Chan has a show called AE Double Back where they talk about wrestling with two very delightful people who I actually like very much, Teresa and Calder. I assume they're still on the show. I haven't been updated that they've left.
Indeed.
Okay. Well, it's a wonderful show. You should probably check it out if you like wrestling. If you like AEW, is the hottest thing on the planet right now. I see more people every day talking more about AEW than WWE.
I mean,
that is really saying something.
You heard about the pay-per-view this past weekend, right?
I've heard it was an amazing pay-per-view. I did not see it. Maybe I would have enjoyed it, but nobody ever invites me to these things.
You should probably look into that. There's probably a good reason.
You should probably look into it and get somebody to invite you. No, Chan went the other direction.
Shit,
you should probably look into why people hate you.
Wait, did Glenn get killed? Is that why you're not spoiling it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Glenn got killed on the pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. That's why you got to tune in.
Killed by the smoke monster. Who turned out was Christian Slater the whole time.
Holy shit.
Oh my God. This is a more consistent episode of TV than He-Man.
Oh my goodness. Well, anyway, you can hook up with us on Twitter. Remember, tag Gia at G.I. Joe Podcast and all three of us if you actually want us to see the message. Or if you want to be weird, tag one of us and not the others, but still somehow involve the rest of us in your message. Don't be that guy, you weirdo. We're not all going to see that. Except when Gina posted in our group chat and says, who's this effing weirdo?
Yep.
That's pretty realistic, right? Anyway, you can find us at G.I. Joe Podcast on Twitter, but individually, I am at Almighty Ray.
At 999 RPMs.
I'm at Gina Ippy.
check out My Three Dads, check out the Who Would Win show, because now, as much as I made fun of Chan, I didn't plug my own shows. Okay, this has been going on too long. I think we're done.
In the center of the universe, on the planet Eternia, looms Castle Grayskull, ancient fortress of mystery. Its power sought by the dark forces of Snake Mountain, sanctuary of sin and sorrow, ruled by the demon Skeletor and his evil acolytes. And the only thing that stands in their way is Prince Adam, who defends the secrets of Castle Grayskull as He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe. Only four others share this secret, guardians of Grayskull all, amidst an army of the honorable, committed to guarding Castle Grayskull from the havoc of destruction. For those who control Grayskull control the power to be masters of the universe.
I'll make sure to play a really loud alarm just so that you know that it's coming.
Hi, I'm Kevin Goatee.
Hey, I'm Kevin Israel.
We host Gutting the Sacred Cow, the best and most unique movie debate podcast out there. Why?
Because we invite our guests to pick a film that they find overrated or hate and try to convince us to see their argument.
They must pick a film that is a financial success, widely beloved, or critically acclaimed.
That's right. Some of the films our guests have tried to eviscerate, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Pulp Fiction, Ghostbusters? You can find us on all podcast platforms like Apple, Google, Spotify, and more. And if you want to watch our smiling faces, we're also on YouTube.
GuttingTheSacredCow.com is where you find all of our information. And we look forward to our guests infuriating you when they attack your favorite films.
I think that helps, honestly. Yeah, I'm into that.
Raise, you get that fuck in. Did you get that phone alert today?
I can't hear a word you're saying, Gina. Chan is making air raid sounds.